Here at Physio Matters, we think physio matters. Become a member today and access over 500 webinars. Get free tickets to shows and access new content instantly. Access at home, work, or on the train to make sure your CPD is on track. Physio-matters.com. More content than the all-you-can-eat buffet cart.
Hi guys, a bit of a quick one today, so we're going to try and rattle through this in 10 minutes, and you guys know me enough to know that I struggle to even get my name out in 10 minutes, so I'm going to try at least briefly to shut up and let Jonathan chat about this, because we've had a really interesting chat off air, and we've had a back and forth on LinkedIn over the last few months almost, trying to get this together, so I'm glad to grab him. Jonathan is the chair of the AACP, and we've had some news recently with regards to thoracic needling, thoracic acupuncture, that I wanted to make sure that we got a chance, and we're both keen to make sure that then there is no misinformation out there and people understand where they stand, because it's an important safety thing. So what we're not covering today is an interesting deep dive into the clinical oohs and ahs and the validity and evidence around needling, of which we know that there's some interesting chat to have, which we're going to postpone for another day. But today, this little section is just about the governance around thoracic needling. And I really appreciate Jonathan's time for us to just try and make sure we clarify a few bits about what's happened recently. And he's the perfect person for us to get the sort of timeline is where I want to get you first, Jonathan, if I can. So just tell us about what this subject matter is. And then obviously we'll walk towards what the take homes are for people latterly. But what's the timeline on this story, if you could?
Okay, Jeff, thanks for that. Yeah, I appreciate you asking me on. So going back to 2016, I first got involved in this. I worked with some guys from the CSP on the learning from litigation. They reached out to me, that had a few issues with a few pneumothoraces and wanted my take on that. So we put together a document, and then that was put up online, as I say, learning from litigation. And we discussed where we should be with the standards, you know, what would be a good idea with minimum standards. And the team at the CSP agreed that it would be a good idea, but it fell outside of really the remit of the CSP as a network as they are. It didn't really, as they weren't a governing body, it didn't really sort of fit in their remit, but they agreed that it would be a good idea to look at. So the AACP has always had minimum standards with training, and we've kept those going over the years. And if we fast forward to 2022, and CSP reached out to me again. I've been working as an expert witness and looking at cases of pneumothoraces and so on in court, and looking at what happens when things haven't gone as well as they could have, perhaps for clinicians, and where the, I suppose, where the ideas around preventing those incidents have occurred. So we had some interesting conversations around the end of 22, beginning of 23. About what that looked like for the CSP and you know, what it looked like for standards. And again, we had those conversations, but again, it fell outside of the remit of the CSP to set about minimum standards. But we've seen an increase in pneumothoraces, which was far beyond acceptable. You know, my view as somebody who teaches cadaveric anatomy and someone who's been, as in his clinician, and someone who's been teaching anatomy for 20 years, is that because it's a mechanical intrusion of a needle into a physical structure, that it technically it's 100% avoidable. And I know people might have issues about that and talk about anatomical variants, and those are the things that I talk about on anatomy courses as well, and I demonstrate them. I've got some articles coming out and a book chapter coming out about it as well, and how to avoid these things. But in short, I felt that with correct training, it should be 100% avoidable. And so we discussed these things, CSP was in agreement, and it turned out that because of this increased number of pneumothoraces that CSP was seeing, and I'll just state for the record that none of them were AACP members, which was good to find out that going back 10 years, we hadn't had any recorded claims in that field, and adverse events were minimal as well across any field. But the burden on the CSP insurance was significant. I understand their decisions to retract that cover. It's unfortunate because I feel that I think level of training has kind of led to this. Can't highlight any training in particular. As I can say, I can tell you which training wasn't causing it, but I can't tell you which training was. For obvious sure. reasons.
I want to just pause there a second just to make sure that people that might not know exactly the details of the decision. So recently, I think beginning of was it beginning of this year? Was it announced at least that it
It
was
was
decided?
end of December, it was announced.
End of December it was announced, and basically that those that are insured under the CSP's PLI, that's macro across all their members, regardless of discipline, regardless of you know, it's the fact that I currently don't practice acupuncture, but I would be insured as it stands, as long as considered competent to, of which I have done previous training. But what I'm meaning is that it's a blanket policy, isn't it? That the PLI is. And so a decision was made in light of the fact that then there had been these pneumothoraces, that then that would be, whilst retaining and within the scope of practice of physiotherapy, it would not be insured under that policy as a means of just managing escalating costs for insurance, because these pneumothoraces are never events if induced by acupuncture. And so therefore it's something that has to be immediately paid out on, and therefore increases premiums, etc. So that decision was made. The only reason I was even weighing in on it to some extent initially was because at that point the AACP then announced that ahead of time. So before anyone had any heard anything directly from the CSP on that, in terms of the members hearing anything, the AACP then announced on its social media, from what I understand, and I don't know if it was a concurrent email, but that was the news, and that was something that you were frustrated and disappointed by, but that was what was announced. And then this is what we're trying to tidy up a bit today, is to try and find out a little bit more about where people stand now. But that was kind of, I then mainly sort of chipped in saying that I was frustrated at understanding of the frustration and the disagreement that might have occurred. However, it was more that at that point, that then really threw the chessboard up in the air, and people were then crying out for answers, of which then the comms that were going to come out really was it got ahead of it. And in around the time it was around Christmas, from what I recall now, that was something that then meant that there was a lot up in the air for a bit. So just tell me a little bit about what happened there, and how we can put that right.
Yeah, so obviously the AACP had announced that they felt a duty of care to members to notify them as soon as possible, because they felt that it would impact on their livelihood and their options. So they thought they wanted to get that message out to members as soon as possible. And then obviously we know kind of what happened. I was actually in clinic when all that happened, but.
Was it their news? Was it your news? I mean, it's funny because you talk about them rather than, because you are the chair of the AACP. So yeah, was it your as an organisation's news to unilaterally deliver?
I suppose as chair, I don't manage the business. You know, I suppose it's an interesting where sort of roles sort of sit. So that's left to different components of the business to run. I don't personally run that. So I relayed the information that had come to me from the CSP to the board generally, and then in discussions internally, it was decided that that it would be proper to, for the benefit of the membership, to notify them as soon as possible about the issue, so there was no delay on that. And that's where the motivation from that came from. It wasn't to get from under the CSP or anything like that. It was purely made as a kind of a due diligence to AACP members, really, and that was the motivation behind that.
Because I can understand that. I mean, for me, it you never really. I don't like to impugn motives. I like to just believe people, and I think that's absolutely reasonable to think. It's just that, in hindsight, it feels a little naive, and it felt a bit petty because of the fact that then we know that confusion did come downstream. Now, could that have been avoided? I don't know. Would that always going to be the case, regardless of whether it be a few days later or as a part of a shared statement, etc.? But it did seem more vindictive than clearly was intended. And I think that that's the thing that was why I even piped up and said, like, it just didn't seem proper, which is funny because I'm all for transparent, sometimes fairly spontaneous with my comms, but it's just as an organization, it just felt like it's clearly a wider story to tell. There are consequences here for people's careers and the use of their modality and the safety of it and stuff. So it felt like there was, it caused more chaos, that the method of comms caused more chaos than it could have done.
Yeah, I suppose when you look at it from that perspective, I suppose it depends which side you look at it as well, because as I say, the AACP's motive was to get that information out. That if the information was how can I put it, was as genuine as it was, then it should come out. That was the view of the AACP itself. Looking at it, was the back and forth, and was that, could that been avoided? Yeah, I'm sure it could. Looking at it that way, I think that at the time, the AACP didn't see it as being belligerent or being petty or anything like that. I think it may have spooled out of that. When I'm not on a lot of the platforms that the conversations are on, as you may know. I'm only on LinkedIn and Instagram. I don't have any other social media platforms. I don't have access to them. And I am not responsible for the media that goes out from the AACP as well. Obviously, I stand behind the decisions they make. But yeah,
It's a funny one as well for me, I suppose, because you've got this, so you're wearing a few hats. And in that instance, I do feel for any of your comms team, as well as anyone that's interacting with me as lay members, is that I obviously am in that instance. I'm speaking as Jack Chew, arguably part of Physio Matters, which has got a skin in the game, both in education, governance, CPD, raising standards, always going on about that stuff. I'm also happen to be a member of council for the CSP, but wasn't privy to those decisions. I'm like you, not involved in the sort of executive decisions, or specifically in this case, wasn't involved in the strategic decisions made under the sort of profession and practice department and directorate. So it was more that then I do feel for those that felt that they were then in engaging with me, were then talking with the CSP, which wasn't necessarily, and it's hard to explicitly make clear as to who's speaking as what. And so instead it was that me speaking as someone that was just saying this would surely have been better if the AACP and the CSP were to then make a statement that offered clarity with its subsequent resources and FAQs as to what that means, because the scope of practice thing was really relevant in that that's where some people were then thinking that these things were going to be outlawed. There was no way forward, which is not the case. So obviously I want to move us then towards what we want people to make sure that they know from now. So what we've talked about what was, but what is the situation as it stands? What do people that do acupuncture need to know about the now and future?
And I think that's what we should focus on, really. We should focus on the facts, where we are. And what's going forward. So I'll just give you some bullet points on that. So again, the first thing that people should be aware of is obviously that thoracic acupuncture, dry needling, stays within scope of practice going forward, regardless of whatever else. So that's the first thing people need to know. The second thing is that if you take your insurance, your PLI from the CSP, that as of the 1st of July 2024, then thoracic needling will be out of that. Now, some people have asked me, what does thoracic needling refer to? Well, I think anything where you can consider anything thoracic or anything that would cause harm to a thoracic organ. So you could be needling cervical spine and still get a pneumothorax, could be needling lumbar and still get a pneumothorax. That would be classed as thoracic needling, because you're impacting on a thoracic organ, regardless of whether you determine that's geographically thoracic externally, that it would count as thoracic internally. So that's the component. The next thing to know is if you are AACP member, then the AACP has brokered extended insurance by James Hallam to cover thoracic needling. So if you're a member, then from the 1st of July, you'll have no impact at all. You'll be able to carry on practicing. We've demonstrated such a low risk profile, James Hallam, that they're happy to carry on extending out the insurance. There is a increased cost on that that will come into effect after the 1st of July when your membership renews after that point, but it's fairly minimal given the cover. It's going to work out to about an extra £40 on the insurance, and we're not-for-profit, so that is the exact price that we're paying for it. And I suppose the other point to consider is that if you're not IACP and you wish to continue practicing thoracic needling after the 1st of July and you previously take your insurance from the CSP, then you have to organise some other extension of your insurance or some other further insurance or not do it.
And do you accept if someone then joins the AACP, can they then come under your insurance? Do they need to do another course? Do they need to top up with their education?
Not necessarily. It depends. What we've tried to do is obviously first thing is to maintain standards for the clinician and for the patient safety and for everything else that goes with that. But we have a number of entry routes or re-entry routes into the organization. So if you've done a course that's considered to be an acceptable standard previously, and you've kept up your CPD and you've kept your diligence with your work and you can prove your CPD, then entry back in is just a case of rejoining.
Right.
We have a flow chart basically, which offers the path of least resistance depending on your particular circumstances. So it isn't just a, oh yeah, you need to do a whole training course. We looked at this a few years ago, and people haven't got the time and the money. And if they've kept the skills up, then it should be a relatively easy return back to the fold, as it were. If they haven't, then we can find other routes. And there's different ones, everything from a foundation course to just joining and everything in between.
Sure. Okay. No, that's really useful to know. And one for future conversations between us and involving anyone else that might be useful in the conversation is for us to think about what would minimum standards look like. We can talk about clinical justifications for needling, thoracic or otherwise, but that's something we've not got time for or need for today. Thank you so much for your time for us to just be able to set the record straight. And for me, it was just about making sure that then, you know, we don't, it doesn't take much to panic us sometimes. We're a skittish bunch, because we're often just getting on with stuff. And so sometimes it's just anything governance, insurance, safety, it can throw us off. And I can understand why. I'm always apologetic if I end up contributing to that chaos rather than tidying it up. And I think in that instance, I had some lessons to learn myself with regards to personal and professional comms. So now at least we've been able to put this on and be able to hopefully offer some clarity. Anyone else, any comments and questions or what have you, will help with that. We want to amplify the right messages that tidy up things rather than make them more murky. But me and Jonathan will catch up once we get as diaries together for a more integrated chat about styles of practice, etc., that I'm sure many of you would be interested in our shared audiences. But for now, thank you so much for your time, Jonathan. Have you anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
Well, just if people have got concerns, got worries, reach out to me. You can find me on LinkedIn, Jonathan Hobbs. You can find me on Instagram, Hobbs Acupuncture. You can Google me, just email me, ask your questions, whether it's you, your boss, your organization, you want clarification, here to help. So just reach out. And thanks again, Jack, for clearing everything up.
Nice one. Yeah, no problem. I mean, we can do the same as well. We're happy to signpost over if people want to reach out to us independently and we can sort of point you in the right direction. It's just important for us all to make sure that we get this right and that the misinformation doesn't get a chance to sort of spread. But congratulations again to the AACP for putting together a top-up package. And it's something that did give me pause, is that the fact that they've been able to demonstrate such a low risk profile, definitely they helped me to adjust some of my arguments and understanding of the situation. And it should be something that does then give people pause with regards to the fact that then how might we best set a minimum safety bar that can then be cleared so that we can all be confident and then have a better integrated public liability as a practice, as a profession, because I think there is some health to that as well. So lots more to talk about, but thanks a lot for today. Appreciate it.
Yes, thanks.
Are you fed up with printing out exercise programs, or horror, drawing them? Solve every exercise prescription issue you can think of using Rehab My Patient. Thousands of pictures, videos of every movement you can dream up. Send by email or WhatsApp, translate into different languages at the click of a button. But don't take our word for it. Sign up for a 3-month free trial now. Just go to rehabmypatient.com/physiomatters.